I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. To minute 80 of season 6 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic It's a Wonderful Life, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off this week and our 700th episode, woohoo, is Bubbly from Fight Club Minute. Welcome back to the show, Bubba.
Hey, it's good to be back for one last day of the week.
Well, good morning, Mr. Potter. What's the news? So minute 80 begins with Carter making a plea and ends with Billy continuing to taunt Potter. So we ended things yesterday with George being over ecstatic to be able to talk to Harry on the phone and not realizing that the bank examiner is right there next to him. And what he starts telling is the bank examiner, Carter, ended yesterday's minute by saying, "Now, if you'll cooperate," and he continues by saying, "I'd like to finish with you by tonight. I want to spend Christmas in Elmira with my family." Do you have any idea where Elmira is?
I have no idea. I considered looking it up, but I figured that you would. My first thought whenever I hear Elmira goes to the 90s cartoon Tiny Toon Adventures that had a character named Elmira.
Oh, really? Wow. Okay. I did not know that. So basically do you know where Bedford Falls is supposed to take place?
I knew at one point, but I don't remember.
Okay, so it's a fictional town in upstate New York. So yeah. What I decided to do is, in order to try and figure out what or where Elmira is, so I obviously looked it up to see if there's one in New York. And there is a city known as Elmira in upstate New York, which it has a population of 26,000 people as of the 2020 census, which is actually down about 3,000 people from the census 10 years earlier, which is a decline of more than 7%. It is surrounded by, on three sides, there is a town known as Elmira, which I don't really get. How can you have a town and a city next to each other? You have the town of Elmira and the city of Elmira. Does that make any sense to you?
It probably has something to do with zoning and government.
Possibly. And it's located on the southern tier of New York, very close to the Pennsylvania state line. The first European American settler in Elmira was a man named Abraham Miller in the 1790s, and it was known as a it was used as a prisoner of war camp during the Civil War. It was in use from 1864 till June 1864 until the fall of 1865, and it was known as Hellmira by the inmates. The Confederate soldiers that were held there weren't you pleased. There were 12,000 Confederate soldiers who were incarcerated there, and nearly 3,000 of them died while they were there, mostly from malnutrition, exposure to winter weather or disease that has to do with the fact of low sanitary conditions and the lack of medical care there. Not necessarily a place that has a great history when it comes to those type of things. It's hard to say the distance between Elmira and Bedford Falls because of the fact that Bedford Falls is not real. Mm-hmm. Elmira has a total area of 22.5 square miles. So, and part of that is even water. There's like a river that runs through it, the Chemung River. So yeah, it's hard to tell exactly how far it is, but the bottom line is that it can't be that far if he wants to get home to Elmira for Christmas Eve. My assumption is it's not like a 6 hour drive.
No, probably 1 to 2 hours at most.
Exactly. This is part of his jurisdiction. This is where he needs to go. And that's pretty much what I would think about how that fits in there. George then turns to him and goes, "Well, I don't blame you for Mr. Carter. Just step right in here, we'll fix you up." So, George is pretty amicable. He's obviously on a high because of Harry. But he also is not worried at all about the fact that this bank examiner is there, which tells us that at least as of now, we know this will change within, I guess, the next few minutes of this movie. But as far as George is concerned, everything is by the books. Everything is done properly. There's nothing to be concerned about from that perspective. Then the shot changes, and we're in the bank, and we see Uncle Billy there standing, ready to work out his write out his deposit slip. And he says, December 24th. And then he goes, $8,000. Now, how much do you think $8,000 is in 1945 compared to today's money? What would be
Let's
your guess?
see. I'll doing my math based on previous inflation calculations. Like 8,000 of be about $14,000. No, that's $140,000.
Okay, you are very close. It's 136,000. There you go. It's $8,000 is 136,467. They have made a crap load of money this week that they're depositing that sum into the bank. I mean, that's a lot of money. Maybe it's the
Yeah,
end of the year donations. I don't know.
although that stack of money does not look like $8,000 in cash.
Maybe he was using $1,000 bills.
Well,
$500 bills. They
I
do
mean,
have them,
the only two bills that we that I can see that have a good look, they're both fives.
Correct. Maybe.
Because there's a five on the top of the stack and there's a five in the middle of the stack, and then
Wouldn't it be really funny
the
if
rest of it.
Uncle Billy just got the number wrong? It's not really 8,000. Oh, I get $80 here. All right. That's yeah, that'll be 8,000 that I should be putting down up there.
I mean, even if the rest of those would almost have to be a lot of hundreds in there.
Yes.
And even then, it only looks like a stack of maybe 40 bills.
Yeah, there's the
And even if they were all hundreds, that would only be 4,000.
That's right. It's not $8,000. But again, Uncle Billy's delusional. So.
This minute and the next minutes, I feel like this kind of shows that Uncle Billy is the third villain of this movie, next along with Potter and the Bank Examiner.
You think he's a villain, or he's just the absent, you would say he's the absent-minded professor?
I mean, it may be not so far as the villain, but he is the reason, like he is the cause of them getting and like he's the reason why George is about to go commit suicide. So like in that respect, he's not intentionally the villain, but he's unintentionally the villain of the movie.
So you're saying he's basically the Cavendish of It's a Wonderful Life. So.
Exactly. He's the one that causes the downfall of George Bailey.
Yes. Okay. That is fair. And at this point, as he's doing it, the camera moves a little bit over to the left, and we see Potter enter the bank, and a whole bunch of people run over to him. And we basically hear these guys are all just kissing ass to him. Oh, Merry Christmas, Mr. Potter. Merry Christmas. You have all these different people that are walking up to him and stuff like that. And like he doesn't even respond very much with the way that he likes getting the attention, obviously. But I don't know. And then Billy walks over and just grabs the newspaper from him. He says, "Well, good morning, Mr. Potter. What's the news? Oh, well. Harry Bailey wins Congressional Medal. That couldn't be one of the Bailey boys. You just can't keep those Baileys down. Now, can you, Mr. Potter?" And then Potter snaps back and goes, "How does Slacker George feel about that?" He goes, "Very jealous, very jealous. He only lost three buttons off his vest." Of course, Slacker George would have gotten two of those medals if he had gone. Bad ear. Now, it's funny that he talks about the bad ear because, you know, he could have easily let George go. You know, he was on the draft board, as we talked about earlier this week. "Oh, George Bailey, yeah, let's send him off to fight in the Pacific." He goes, "Yes."
Yeah, I am curious if you found anything out about the phrase, "He only lost three buttons off his vest," because I have that line stood out to me as something that I have no idea what that is supposed to mean.
Okay, I mean, I have an idea. I couldn't find a specific thing, but I do have an idea about it. But let's just finish up the dialogue here. And then Uncle Billy says, "Yes, after all, Potter, some people like George had to stay home. Not every heel was in Germany and Japan." And then he laughs to himself. So, first of all, you got to say that Uncle Billy has a lot of guts. You know, he talks back to Mr. Potter. He calls him Potter. He doesn't say Mr. Potter all the time. He sometimes calls him Potter. You know, no, he doesn't really give him any type of respect by the way that he speaks to him. Obviously, at the beginning, he starts off with Mr. Potter, but then afterwards, he calls him Potter. Now, my interpretation of the fact that he only lost three buttons is related to the fact that, you know, he's saying, is he jealous? And he's saying, you know, he's calm and collective, that possibly he's sitting and boasting, and he's boasting so much that the buttons on his vest popped off, because like he's laid back and has his belly extended. That would be my interpretation of it, that what he's trying to say there, you know, that he lost these buttons out of pride for what his brother did, and not for any other reason. But I don't know. I couldn't find anything that explains it even better than that.
Yeah, I tried, you know, just casually searching for it, but the only thing that kind of came up was the line from this movie.
Right. Yeah, that's one of the problems when you do movies by minute and you look up things, and the only response you get is this movie, is the movie you're talking about. Yeah. It's a problem. And I mean, he calls George a slacker. Do you know what a slacker is? What the official definition of a slacker is?
I mean, I don't know the official definition of a slacker. I would imagine that it's that the etymology would come from like how a rope that is not taut has slack in it. So a slacker would be like, you know, if you have a group of people that are pulling a rope, then a slacker would have slack in front of it. So they're not actually pulling the rope along with everybody else.
Okay. That's actually a very interesting explanation that fits in with what it means. I mean, it's basically someone who avoids work or lacks any type of work ethic. Which it's ironic that Potter would call George someone who doesn't have a work ethic. You know, he knows that he does. The term goes all the way back to 1790. It was mostly used during World War I. It was a way to describe someone who was not participating in the war, you know, possibly a draft dodger, things like that. So it could be that that's what he's referring to. You know, that George is a draft dodger. That's what I would think.
Possibly.
Can you think of any pop culture movies that use the word slacker?
I mean, there's the, I believe it's the Jim Jarmusch movie, Slacker.
Okay, I mean, I was referring to in the dialogue, someone who calls everyone slackers.
It was a principal. Was it the
yes, it was.
Breakfast Club?
Nope. You're close. You got the right year. It was 1985.
Back to the Future.
Correct. You're a slacker, McFly. The principal,
Strickland.
Strickland. There you go, Principal Strickland. Thank you very much for that. Idea here is that Potter is trying to downplay George while Billy is talking about, how great George is, even though it's all about Harry. It's interesting. They're talking about Harry. They're literally talking about Harry, but referring to George with everything. By the way that they're talking about Harry, but they're fighting about George. I think that's a better way to express it.
I also was fascinated by the line that not every heel was in Germany or Japan.
That is correct.
And I think that that's interesting, and I'm curious how much of the meaning of that term, if that changed between the 40s and today, because I feel like looking at it from today, it could have this double meaning where he could be saying that not every heel was in Germany or Japan, as in not every American soldier was in Germany, like not every good person was in Germany and Japan. We also had good people doing work at home, but he could also be using the other definition of heel, as in a bad person, like as in the wrestling term heel, and saying that not every enemy is in Germany and Japan, referring to Potter.
That's how I interpreted it. I interpreted it from the wrestling way of calling someone a heel, which is either a villain or a bad guy or someone who breaks the rules, the antagonist. So, from that perspective, basically Potter, he's saying to Potter, he's saying not every heel was in Germany and Japan, meaning not all of the villains, or the dictators or bad guys or whatever are located in Germany and Japan. There are some of them here in America, like you, Mr. Potter.
Yeah, although I wasn't sure if heel was used in the same way in the 40s,
Yes, it
because
was.
like heel it
It
was.
was, yeah. Yeah, so yeah, that's exactly what they're referring to here. No, the idea is that someone had to stay home to fight with the cruel people here. That's my interpretation of what he's talking about here. Someone had to stay here to deal with people like you. And that's pretty much all I have for this minute. Like I said, Billy laughs at his own wit, but he's, he's slightly absent-minded, which we'll find out more about next week.
I mean, we do get the handoff, and at the end of this minute, we do see the envelope change hands from Billy to Potter.
Correct. Right. But you don't really notice it so perfectly.
And it is also nice that you can see that Billy is wearing one of his signature strings around the
That is
finger
correct.
for the to remind him of something.
Yes.
Which again, I think it's funny because I know that you like to refer to Potter as Harry Potter, and the Billy then falls into the character of Neville Longbottom, and his strings around his finger coincides to Neville's remember-all.
There you go. See? It makes sense. This is the Harry Potter version of It's a Wonderful Life. Exactly. All right. So do you have anything else for this minute before we get into today's segment?
I did notice that we do actually see the bottom half of the paper that we talked about earlier this week, and we do not see the date on the bottom of the paper. So I was wrong in thinking that the date might have been on the bottom half of the paper.
Well, we don't see it clearly. It's not like we just see the pictures, and you can't make out what's written on it.
Yeah, but if the date was in the bottom, it would be in the bottom margin,
Right.
and you can see that the bottom margin is completely
That's
blank,
correct.
and the only text is like the caption for the photo.
Well, apparently everybody knows it's December 24th, so you don't need to write it in the newspaper.
Apparently.
Yes. We're well aware of it. And Billy laughs at his own joke and walks back to go take care of his deposit, which for some reason has disappeared. But it is, I like the sleight of hand that they do here, because they do it in a very subtle way that if you're really not paying attention, you don't see that the envelope of money is accidentally slipped into the newspaper. So I like the way they showed it.
Yeah, I did want to mention that I actually just this year I had an experience finding an envelope of money.
Was it Uncle Billy's? Did it have $8,000 in
Possibly.
$5 bills?
No, it didn't have $8,000, but it did have several hundred dollars in there.
Oh wow. And you weren't
Yeah, we
able to find
were.
the find the real owners?
No, we were just doing some like last minute Christmas shopping at Kohl's because my sister had given me a gift card, and we were in the shoe section, and I was looking at shoes, and my 2-year-old daughter was, running around near us, and she just happened, like, they had the shoe chairs with the little mirror at the bottom, so you can sit down and try on shoes. And there was like four of them right next to each other. And she like reached in between two of them and pulled out this envelope, and it happened to be an envelope of money.
Oh
And
wow.
there was no, yeah, there was no like identifying information. Like it didn't come from a wallet or anything. We were in the store for a good 15, 20 minutes. We didn't see anybody that it could have potentially belonged to. And yeah, that's and it that was like it just mind blowing that happened.
Oh wow. Well, very interesting. Very nice. But again, maybe it was maybe it's part of what Uncle Billy lost.
Could be, yeah.
See, Potter went into the shoe store, put it in there, said, "I'm gonna hide it here, no one will ever find it." Oh damn, that Bubble Wheat and his family found them on found it. Only 77 years later. How could that be? How could that be? Actually, 78 years later, because it takes place in 45. So yeah. All right. So every Friday we have a segment called Oscar Oops, where the idea is that over the last 95 years that we've had the Oscars, so there are many controversies as to what movies should have won instead of, the movie that was chosen. So the idea behind the segment is to let my guests talk about their five. I guess favorite. I don't know if that's the right word. The five movies that they think were the biggest mess ups in the Oscars. Some other movie they where they feel that some of their movie is more deserving of winning that award. Obviously, it must be a movie that was actually nominated for Best Picture that year. So, what have you got first, Bubba? Start with your number five and work your way up.
Well, this coming up with this list was simultaneously very easy and very difficult because I am not a I don't watch a lot of prestige movies that would be nominated for Best Picture. And I kind of, as I was going through this, I also gave myself kind of the double challenge, and I decided to only include years where I had seen both the Best Picture winner for that year, as well as one other that was nominated, and that I thought was equal to or better than what won that year. So
Okay,
the
that is fair.
one of the yeah, so one of the years that I completely threw out was I think there was only 7 years where that actually happened, where I had seen the Best Picture winner and one other Best Picture
I
nominee.
think our friendship is
And
over,
one of those
Bubba.
years and one of those years was Schindler's List, where the Fugitive was also nominated. And my first thought was, I'm not trying to put the Fugitive over Schindler's List, as fun of a movie as the Fugitive was. And of course, I do have to give it a quick mention that I mean, clearly, because I'm spending a year covering it minute by minute, I think that Fight Club should have at least been nominated in '99, which it was not. So I could not include it in this list. So I will start with my number five, which is going all the way back to 1950, which, considering what I've said in my previous lists might be surprising that I, because I have not seen a ton of black and white films,
Okay, but you've seen apparently
but
All About Eve, and my assumption is Sunset Boulevard. That's what I would guess, but I could be wrong.
corrected. And this one was close because I did really enjoy All About Eve, but I think that Sunset Boulevard is a slightly better movie. So I think give the win to Sunset Boulevard over All About Eve, but that one is close, and so that's why it's number five. My number four, I am going to go with 1989, and I think that I would put Dead Poets Society over Driving Miss Daisy. And again, I like both of these movies, because I did, and in fact, Driving Miss Daisy is one of the first movies that I can remember seeing in theaters with my parents,
Okay.
where I would have been 9 years old, and I know that they like that it was a movie that my parents wanted to see, and I guess it was PG, so they thought it was okay to bring me along, even though I'm sure I wasn't super interested in seeing Driving Miss Daisy. And we saw it. It's like the Dollar Theater. And then my number three, I am going to go up to 1995, and I will put Apollo 13 over Braveheart, which Braveheart is a decent movie, but I think Apollo 13 is a fantastic movie, and that's actually I don't tend to see movies in theaters more than once, but I think that might be the only. Well, one of two movies I think that I've seen, two or three movies that I've seen in the theaters more than once, because I watched it, I think, with one of my friends, and then I visited my sister who lived out of state, and I saw it with my sister.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then for my number two, I will go to 2001, and I will choose the Lord of the Rings Fellowship of the Ring over A Beautiful Mind. Because I love the entire Fellowship of the Ring trilogy, and I do think that A Beautiful Mind is great, but Fellowship of the Ring is the one movie, especially of the trilogy, that I can keep coming back to over and over, and I think it's so well done, and I think that where it cuts at the end of the movie is a logical cut for the trilogy. And the whole trilogy is fantastic, of course.
Yes.
And then my number one, I am going to go back to 1994
Ooh.
and put Pulp Fiction over Forrest Gump,
I knew that's where you were
which
going with that one.
I, yeah, and I didn't write it down, but I think I had seen one other nominee from 94, which I don't remember off the
You've
top of my
never
head,
seen
but,
Shawshank?
I have never seen Shawshank.
I think this is the last time I'm inviting you back here, Bob.
I do keep wanting to go back to it, but my last, my first podcast, film-wise, was all about how I hadn't seen a lot of these great classic movies, and so I would have people come on to give me an excuse to watch some of these classic movies. And I definitely had Shawshank Redemption on the list of potential movies for someone to choose for a Filmwise episode, but no one had picked that one just
Oh, wow.
yet.
You see, you just didn't
And
have me on the show, so,
maybe I'll get back to
you
it. One of these days, whenever I magically have more time and not dealing with three other podcasts at the
Yeah, I
same
understand.
time as
Trust
well.
me. I'm very familiar. All right, great. Thank you very much for that list. That was great. So do you want to one last time this week tell people where they can find Bubbly?
Sure, I since I just mentioned it, I will go ahead and plug, my older podcast, which was called Filmwise, and that's Film WHYS, which It stands for the Why Haven't You Seen This Film? Two movies that I brought up in the Oscar Oops list. Those were all previous episodes that I watched for the first time through that podcast. So there's, I cover a lot of classics as well as a lot of superhero movies, which is often not a fair trade, but it's always a fun discussion.
Okay. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So, Bubba, thank you very much for joining me this week. It was quite insightful. I will be back Monday with a new guest. But until then, hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.